Hey, what's up? You're listening to Script Blast, a podcast to help you write better screenplays and write a better life. My name is Hudson Phillips. I'm a screenwriter and producer from Atlanta, Georgia. Just a quick reminder about our brand new and absolutely free online workshop, Blast Off, that gives you a step-by-step guide to making your screenwriting career a reality. You can sign up for free at scriptblast.com. Today, I talk with Jenny Frankfurt. Jenny was a literary manager for 20 years before founding the Finish Line Script Competition. Finish Line is based on the idea that rewriting is essential to being a successful screenwriter, so they provide development notes for writers to rewrite and resubmit new drafts for free throughout the competition. It's the only screenwriting competition that I fully endorse, and I can say that Jenny and the people behind it have a real passion for helping writers excel, and you'll see that come through in this interview. Jenny is a wealth of knowledge, and I took so many notes during this episode as we talked about tips for breaking into the industry and what recurring issues she sees and the literal thousands of screenplays she's read. This is some of the best advice on rewriting you'll ever get. Here's my conversation with Jenny. Hey, great. Jenny, thanks so much for hanging out with us today in this world that we find ourselves in. We're about, what, 3 weeks into our social distancing time right now?
Oh, God. Is that all? I don't know. I
think it's been it does feel like a lifetime.
It's been longer out here in Los Angeles, I think, than for you guys. But yeah, it's been a long time.
So tell me a little bit about, because I know kind of we met a couple years ago doing kind of screenwriting stuff with me doing Script Blast and you doing Finish Line Script Comp. And we just really connected and we're very like-minded kind of people and really wanting to help people. But I don't know much about your past before that. I know you did. You were a lit manager for a while. Yeah. But go back to when you were younger. Is film something you always wanted to be a part of and work in?
Yeah. I mean, you know, everybody has their own path and some people are privileged in that path and some people have to sort of scramble from nowhere. I was kind of privileged, I have to admit. I was always a film buff. My family was, you know, into films. We lived in Manhattan, and so there was culture, you know, kind of everywhere, and a fourplex, which was a big deal then, you know, down the street. And so we used to go to the movies a lot. But also, my mom's best friend was married to the director Arthur Penn, who did Bonnie and Clyde and Miracle Worker and Little Big Man and stuff like that. So, I mean, we used to, and we, I mean, they, we were, our families were very, very close. So we saw them all the time. And I just think he had a huge influence on me.
Gotcha.
And I kind of admired him. And then I got deeper into film and I had this connection with him so I could talk to him. And yeah, I mean, I don't know where it started, but I had the opportunity to have connections that helped me. And then I went to NYU.
Okay. At that point, were you wanting to get into filmmaking or acting or writing or anything like that? What was your path at that point?
I always, again, weird stuff. Like I always felt, when I was watching a movie, even when I was really young, and I didn't even know what to call this, I'd be like, this is not the right movie for this actor. Like, there's some sort of management skill, like, embedded in my brain, where I'd be like,
yeah,
if I were telling this actor what to do, I would have done this differently. And so I always had that in the back of my mind. As things progressed in my knowledge of film, I wanted to be, I essentially wanted to be Sherry Lansing, who's been my great idol for many, many years. I wanted to run a studio by the time I was 30. And that didn't happen, but that was okay because, you know, I kind of turned a corner to wanting to work with writers and stuff like that.
So what was that journey like? So you tell me about kind of what your interest in kind of literary management was, what that world was like then, and then how you kind of helped writers along that journey. What did you
coming from that side, so many writers are curious about what exactly a manager does, how they help writers. Do I need a manager? All that kind of stuff. What did you learn from that portion of your career?
When I went to NYU Film School, and I didn't really want to be there. I felt it was kind of what I should be doing. Uh-huh. And I spent most of my time. So for people who are thinking, should I, you know, do I have to go to film school? No, the answer is no. I'm pretty sure the answer is no, because what I did during all my time there was watch movies in the library at NYU. You can go into these cubicles and with headphones and check out movies like a library. It was wonderful. And I just did that all day pretty much when I wasn't in a class that I wasn't really doing very well in that was right. Outside of film. And I obviously was taught about film, which was great. I majored in cinema studies, not film and film production.
Gotcha.
So I learned a lot about film. And I do think that that's really important for writers to have knowledge of filmmakers and filmmaking and, you know, really do your research on what makes films that are wonderful and studied, what films that are wonderful and studied, you know, I mean, what makes films special, you know, what makes certain films special and what makes certain filmmakers special. But so I did that for a while, and then I got a job. I knew at that point I wanted to manage or be an agent. I don't think management was really that well developed a career at that point. I wanted to be an agent, and I got a job as a floater at what was then William Morris, which melded into Endeavor, which you know, they merged. But back then it was just William Morris, permanent temp. So wherever they needed me, I would go.
Yep.
And I learned, it was the greatest job because I learned about contracts. I learned about music. I learned about writing. I learned about actors. I learned about, you know, whatever. And when people from the West Coast office of William Morris came into town, I would be their assistant. So I got a lot of insight into what was going on in Hollywood and here. I mean, in here, I'm in Hollywood. in New York. I don't know where I am in my anymore. But, you know, in the whole of the industry and working with, you know, agents who were working with really high-level actors mainly at that time, Julia Roberts. And
in that time, I'm curious, did you feel like, did Hollywood still have that shine for you, or did it ever have that shine, or seeing a peek behind the curtain, did you get turned off to it, or what was your vibe at that point?
That happened a lot later.
Gotcha. Okay. See,
I got turned off a lot later, but, no, at that point the shine was blinding. I mean, I was dying to get out to LA, and I was in New York. Finally, what happened was I landed on a desk, which was the head of the theater department.
Gotcha.
And I worked for him for about 2 years. And I learned so much with him because he worked with playwrights, you know, so that was really my foray. Although I was a huge reader growing up, you know, my mother was a therapist, but she had been an English teacher. There was books everywhere. My father wrote. I mean, there's just books all the time. So I read a lot. You know, so working with playwrights was, you know, fascinating. And these were major playwrights. And what I learned there, though, was that he was like, listen, playwrights don't make a lot of money. And so if we're going to, you know, go down this path, you also need to write movies and work in television. And so out of that came people like Warren Light, you know, who has, you know, is a Tony Award winner for his plays, but also runs Law and Order SVU. People like John Robin Bates, who was also, you know, a major playwright who's also worked for television and film, and Bill Mastro-Simone, all of these people. So I learned something about how the commerce and the art have to work together.
Yeah.
And that was a huge lesson. And I stayed there for about 2 years. And then I had such an itch to move to California because I thought, you know, Hollywood was always like this shiny dream.
Right.
And because I had worked on these desks for people who came in from LA while I was, you know, and being their assistant for those 2 weeks or whatever they were in New York, I had made a lot of contacts. And a lot of those people were now at another agency because, you know, agencies changed a lot and during that time. And I was lucky. I was able to, you know, I came out to LA, I interviewed at various agencies, but I had an in at ICM and I got a job as an assistant on a desk there for years. Mostly in the beginning, actors and directors, and then actors and writers, and then actors and directors and writers and all of that stuff. And I just realized that writing was just something that was inherently a medium that I understood better and connected to, and I knew when writing was good and when it wasn't good, and I knew what was wrong when it wasn't good, and I just had much more of an intellect about it. And so I just continued on that path and became a manager, was eventually promoted and became a manager and worked as a manager in various management companies, ahead of the literary department at a management company that's no longer around called Handprint and other companies. And then I went out on my own for a period of time, and I worked with film and TV writers. And I guess to the point of one of the things that you were saying is, you know, what I did, one of the things that I did was I was sort of an Anglophile at that point. So I was in London a lot, and I realized that there was sort of a niche of bringing English speaking, you know, Europeans or Australians or into America to see if I could break them in. So Australia, you know, the UK, Canada, so on and so forth. And that worked, you know, fairly successfully to a degree for a while. It wasn't the only thing I did, but it was sort of kind of where I made a little bit of a mark, and I got my name kind of known as someone who was doing that. So people would come to me and ask me to help. But right. I worked with, you know, really, I just worked with really talented writers from, you know, work staffing and selling scripts and putting them on assignments, you know, open assignments and getting options and helping them work on creating the best script possible. And, you know, that's sort of what a manager should be doing. And now management companies are a lot more powerful. And, you know, with what's going on with certain agencies, you know, with the guild, you know, some agents aren't even being used. But for staffing, it seems like unless you're at a big management company that has the outreach of an agency, it's very helpful to have an agent. You certainly need a manager that has strong relationships with producers and executives at networks and production companies. And I mean, it's about relationships at the end of the day, whether with the agents or whether they're with, execs or producers or whatever. So that's one of the things that's really important for you to know if you're looking for a manager, if you have options of going with a manager, is who they know, you know, who they're working with, what their clients right now are working on, and how that came about.
I love that you've had this kind of windy road, but it all seems to come back to problem solving in storytelling and really helping writers to be their best selves and to tell the best stories possible. Before we get to finish line, because I really want to talk about all you're doing with that, I know a lot of people are going to ask, because it's the question that comes up the most, how do I get an agent or manager? What do you say to people who are asking those questions?
Well, again, it's sort of everybody has their own path, and some are easier and some are more difficult. I mean, obviously competitions are our way. I'm not going to deny that. One of the reasons I created one. I have signed people off of query letters before. It has it has happened. You have to write a really good query letter, and beyond, of course, writing the good query letter, your script has to be amazing. I think people have to. I see people constantly saying, "I want a manager or an agent or whatever," and their writing is not ready, and it's very difficult. I think you have understanding of this as well. It's very difficult to get representation. And listen, with management, anybody can call themselves a manager. So you have to make sure that, you know, you're going with somebody who can actually do something for you, because it's much more frustrating to think someone's working for you and have them not be able to really do anything. and even when you're a manager, you expect that your client is going to be working their contacts as well. And then you kind of swoop in and help, and you have your own agenda with, you know, your own contacts, but it really has to be a partnership. So there's you know, competitions, there's querying, there's, you know, of course it's really comes down to kind of being on it. Listen, I'm not going to lie. It's about being pushy and getting your foot in a door somewhere through someone, you know, and taking that opportunity. And at the end of the day, a manager is looking for great clients. So, you know, and great work. So it's, if you have that, you can get a, you know, it will manifest. I mean, you have to work for it. You have to work with yourself to make great work, but you have to, you know, network and put your name out there and go to things, or, you know, when we can go to things again, or join, you know, groups like Script Blast, or, you know, communities online and stuff like that. And, you know, say that, you know, I'm going to spend this amount of money a year or a month on trying to meet people, or, you know, taking them out to coffee or this is or that. And, you know, you can ask. Like at the end of the competition last year, the level of quality of work had risen so much in what we had received last year, that I had phone calls with all of the semifinalists, and I entered, you know, I mean, some of them were ready for a manager, some of them weren't, but they were ready to, you know, for a little more advice and a path towards that. And yeah, some of them have gotten managers that we've hooked them up with, and some of them have gotten managers on their own, and, you know, they have their own path, and they go to film festivals or screenwriting festivals, or, you know, Sundance or South by Southwest or whatever, and they schmooze and they, but I can't tell you enough that the work has to be ready. You're, because you think your work is ready is not usually enough, because people are not, you know, don't have the separation of, you know, kind of everybody thinks their work might be ready.
Yeah. It's very, very hard to self-diagnose ourselves in that area.
It is hard. And I, you know, Finish Line is a competition where I'm not interested in giving out, you know, laurels or putting you on a list to assuage your ego or to make a number of people on a list. A lot of people do that. But, I mean, I see lists that come out where I've read some of the scripts and I think, this is not a script that's in any way ready to be on a list for a script competition. Yeah. And it could be, you know, with more work. I just don't believe, I believe in telling you that your work is ready when your work is ready, or giving you that move forward when you're getting there. And that's part of what Finish Line does. But, you know, I mean, you have to take chances. I mean, that's the answer to how do you get a manager, is that you have to work for it. You have to take chances. You can't sort of just post on Twitter, I'm looking for a manager. Are any managers? I mean, I see this on Twitter, you know, are any managers out there? And it's like, that's not how it That's not how it works. So a lot of it is, you know, word of mouth. It's doing the work. And it's getting lucky. Yeah. A lot of the time it's getting lucky. I mean, most of the time it's getting lucky, I would say. But that luck doesn't just happen in a vacuum. You have to create it.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell me, so one reason that I love Finish Line so much is that, well, it's two things really that make it stand out of the pack. One is that you guys, you give notes to your writers who enter, and then they can re-enter the rewrite for free based on the notes that you gave them, which I think is awesome because it really shows that you're trying to make their work better. It's not just a, you know, a Laurel slot machine. And the other thing is that you guys actually give real access, that when people win at Finish Line, they get multiple meetings with agents, managers, producers around town. The fact that you do this past time did the, you know, 1 hour phone calls with all the finalists and figured out how you can help them more. It just really shows that your heart is in it and that you actually want to help writers. And that really stands out of the pack for me. But when you were first starting it, it was kind of a crowded field. So what was it that made you get into the screenwriting competition deal right at the beginning there? Why did you make the switch?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for your support of Finish Line. It means a lot because I respect you and Script Blast, and you're doing pretty much the same because you really work with your group, and you know, you're interactive and you're not just sort of monitoring you know, a group on Facebook.
Sure.
You're really moving, you know, trying to move them along and start conversations, so kudos to you as well. I had been, you know, a manager for a long time. I was burning out on it, but I really loved working with writers. I just didn't really want to be in the sort of the belly of the beast anymore. And it was hard, you know, I didn't know quite what to do. I was doing a lot of reading for script competitions sort of in the meantime. And what would happen was I would read scripts and I would think to myself, you know, this script is almost really good, but whoever wrote it needed notes. And they needed time. They didn't, I mean, one of the worst things, I mean, I guess some people might argue it's a great thing as a motivator, but as a, one of the worst things a writer has is a deadline for a script competition. Let's put it that way. You know, for publication, it's one thing. If you're writing a book, you need a deadline, but for scripts, you know, rushing to submit to, you know, a competition because their early bird is going to close or their ending is going to close or whatever. So you rush it and you submit it and it's not ready. Doesn't, you know, it's just a waste of money. And a lot of, I could just tell that a lot of these scripts were rushed and a lot of them hadn't been seen or, you know, really fine tuned by a script consultant. So a friend of mine and I were talking about this one day and came up with this idea that there should be a script competition where you could continue to work on it throughout the competition. I knew I gave very strong notes because I'd been doing it for years as a manager, and the notes that I gave through competitions were, you know, very well received and so on. And I know how to break down story. I mean, I know that this is something I do well. So I thought, well, how do I create the perfect job for myself? I know a lot of people in the film and TV industry around the world. It's very much an international competition. We have, you know, mentors in various countries, English-speaking countries. And I thought, wow, I mean, I could take all the people, you know, the contacts, help people create better scripts, you know, on a scale, time scale that doesn't make them have to rush. And, you know, if, you know, when they're finished with the draft, if they don't want more notes, then let them just keep entering it for free. I mean, there's, it just seems so sad to me when I see that a script has been entered in the competition and people are like, oh, well, I did my best. And it's like, why shouldn't you be able to, you know, that script could be continued to be worked on, you know, while in the competition. What's the, why shouldn't it be?
Yeah,
I mean, I just don't, I mean, you know, but a lot of competitions just have it be, well, you know, you've entered it and that's that. And that doesn't help writers who need help. It doesn't help writers who aren't at a level, you know, of some other people who are, you know, just stronger writers or have had more experience and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I wanted to create a competition where when you won, you didn't just sort of get a, you know, like a couple of meetings and that was that. And you felt like, you know, well, that was cool, but that you really got a full, full dose of opportunity and not 8 people, but this year it's 42 people.
Yeah.
And you know, that those 42 people out of, you know, maybe 10 of those people introduce you to somebody else. And, you know, it goes on. And there are people that you now have, you know, in your contacts. And, you know, it's not like, I see a lot of competitions where it's the same people over and over again who are, you know, acting as mentors. And that's great. But a lot of the time they're just names, you know, to add to a competition. And I try and, you know, get a variety of people who, you know, are really, you know, interested in doing something, giving back and being a part of someone's potential career. And we've had a lot of success with that, which is great.
Yeah, that's great. So one thing I wanted to talk with you about today is come with some practical advice for writers and specifically talk about rewriting, because you're reading all these drafts that may or may not be a first draft, but it's the first draft that you've read of theirs and you're able to give them such great notes. I'm curious, how many of those writers that turn in a rewrite would you say the rewrite is significantly better than what they first turned in?
A lot. I mean, I would say a lot are.
Yeah.
But sometimes it takes a couple of those rewrites to get to significantly better. I'm stuck on the word significantly. Because as you know, I mean, rewriting it's really a process of picking apart and having to break down story or characters or structure or wherever the issues may lie. And it's not rewriting is very difficult. It's probably harder, you know, than the initial writing of the script. We certainly get there with people.
Yeah.
Some people make huge strides and some people don't. And I mean, what that goes to is that not everyone is a great writer. Just because I mean, that's just blunt, is that some people have the ability to rewrite, which is a skill in itself, and know how to implement those notes. Some people try and, you know, have to keep trying and will get there eventually as they keep writing and rewriting and so on. And other people just aren't really very good writers. Like, some people are never going to be great actors. Some people are never going to be great singers, you know, no matter what.
Yeah.
They may enjoy singing. They may enjoy, you know, acting, but they're not going to, you know, they're never going to be Meryl Streep or whomever.
Right.
So there's always going to be those people. And I love those people, by the way, because I'm so in awe of people who write, even if they're not writing, you know, the best script, that they have sat in a chair and written something that's reasonably, if not very, you know, cohesive, and there's a story and there's characters. I mean, it's not easy. I mean, it sounds sort of like, right, oh, that's simple. It's not. It's not simple.
Yeah, yeah.
And I recognize that, and we recognize that here. And I applaud anybody who's written a script, you know, at whatever level they're doing it at.
Absolutely.
So, but as you know, I have given notes to you, and notes that come from us are extensive. I mean, we're there to really help you fix the script, and we're there to have you think about things in a different way. And because we know from having sold scripts, or I know from having, you know, worked with writers as clients who have sold scripts, what sells a script?
Yeah, I think, and I have received notes from you, and I did think they were fantastic. And so I understand that you're not just throwing the writer a bone. You actually give them content that will make their script better. And I do think, and what I appreciate about your process is it does take a long time to get a script to where it needs to be. And I think a part of that is part of it is writer's humility and really learning how to let go of the things that they adore in that first draft. And it takes a long time. Yeah. It takes a big process in order to tear that apart and kind of see what it really needs. So I think that's great that you're doing that. One thing I'd love to do with you is to kind of walk through what you see, because you're reading drafts all the time. I'm sure you've read thousands and thousands of screenplays in your lifetime. What are the kind of top five issues that you keep seeing pop up over and over in first drafts, or what are the consistent notes that you're giving to these writers?
Sure. Before I get into that, I just want to say what you said is exactly right. It's that, you know, it's how much writers are willing to let go of certain ideas.
Yeah.
And even, you know, just lines of dialogue, like, this, you know, kill your darlings, you know. And some of them just aren't, you know. I was reading something the other day where this writer was trying to be funny. And he wasn't succeeding, and it wasn't a comedy, but, right. You know, he was trying to insert, you know, funny lines. And I was like, you know, you don't have to be funny. I mean, this is probably, you can kind of tell when a writer is kind of constructing something around an idea that they have, making all points going to this one line that they've been dying to put on the page or something. And I know that my saying this line doesn't work is heartbreaking. I do know that. I mean, not that I'm the be all end all, but right. I mean, you're paying me for my, you know, or our, my, the other consultants here, you know, for our input. So, and I can tell that that line is, you know, like why you wrote this script or something.
Right.
And it doesn't have to work that way. And I know, and I've worked with writers who have continually said to me, I'm having a really hard time letting go of, you know, how I wanted this to look versus what actually makes a good story. And a lot of those are stories, by the way, that are true stories, that are family stories or personal stories that writers write. And just because it's a personal story doesn't mean that it's a cinematic story or that it's, you know, a good story for the screen as written, you know, or yeah. as it actually happened. That is a big note, I would say, is when you can kind of tell when somebody's writing something, you know, like a personal story. And a lot of the times personal stories just aren't movies. They seem like they could be movies because they are sort of fantastical and they're, you know, it's hard to believe they happened or they are right. about times in you know, the country or the world that were specific and you had a connection, you know, a family member had a connection to them and so on. Sometimes they are and sometimes they're not. And so one of them is that you have to sort of be flexible with what you're willing, you know, what is it that you want? Do you want to tell a story to its T, or are you willing to fictionalize for, you know, storytelling and cinema's sake? So that flexibility is one thing that is definitely on the list of notes is, you know, this doesn't really work. Is it necessary? Do we need to have this conversation about religion in the middle of a conversation that's about, you know, nothing about religion because right, you yeah. want to write about something, you know, and you want those, you know, why are you writing this story? Is it because you really want to get your ideas about a certain topic out and you've created a screenplay around that? You know, what is the focus? A lot of the times it's about focusing scenes or focusing the story, the narrative as a whole, the plot. It can be about a thousand things and you don't really know what it is. Sometimes that's thematic. Sometimes it's not thematic. Sometimes it's really about somebody, you can tell that somebody has something they want to say, but they don't know how to say it within the context of a screenplay.
Right.
And in that case, we say, this may not be a screenplay. You know, it may be a stage play. It may be a short story. It may be a book, something like that. So
that's great.
Focus is really important. What is the focus of the scene? Every scene, and this, you know, might be at a level that of a writer that's not quite there yet, is every scene is essentially an arc, is essentially three acts. It's got a beginning, a middle, and end. It has to give new information that moves the narrative forward. Every scene must move forward.
Mm.
If it doesn't move forward, it either has to be altered or it should be deleted. And that can mean emotionally forward. It can mean physically forward. You know, it can mean in conflict. A new conflict is introduced or developed. But a scene where people are just talking and not saying anything or repeating themselves or, you know, is unnecessary. So a lot of the time when we get scripts that are, you know, ridiculously long for what the story is, you know, if we're not talking about, you know, an epic, we're talking about a small story about a family or, you know, conflict, if it's, you know, not a big action movie, it's because there's a bunch of scenes in there that don't move the story forward. Right. And they're just there. So a lot of the times, you know, it's, what is this focus? What's the focus? What's the meaning? Why is this scene here?
What do you say? What about a genre writer? So I'm writing a comedy or a horror, and the scene may not move the story forward, but it's scary or it's funny. What kind of notes would you give on those kind of scenes in those genres? Because I could see people defending themselves and saying, oh, yeah, but it's so funny, but it's so scary, right?
Well, it depends on how much space it takes, you know, and it depends on where it is in the context of this, of the storytelling. Yes, of course, there's a bunch of scenes in, you know, silly movies or comedy movies. I don't have to be silly, but or horror films that are just there for the genre, for the laugh, for the shock, you know, for the scare, whatever. You know, that works to a degree, but there has to be a structure around it.
Mm-hmm.
We can feel when things have stopped moving properly. Mm. One of the main, another, you know, another one of the main notes we give is listen and feel the rhythm of the script. And it's something like a genre script or where there's an, actually action is one of the genres I would say where just shoving an action scene in feels wrong.
Right.
But a funny scene might work, or adding onto a scene with a bit more humor or a extra scare in a horror film works more than some long drawn out action scene that just sort of comes out of nowhere just because it's an action genre film. It's really about, one of the biggest notes that we give is read your script aloud. Read it aloud, because we can hear when rhythm goes wrong or when there is no rhythm. We can hear that in within a scene or within the script as a whole. And a lot of times the solution to that is outlining, you know, because you're planning the rhythm in the outline of the scenes, or you think you're planning it, but it's actually not working. So you got to go back and figure out. You can, and you can hear it. I mean, I can read a scene aloud of someone's work and know that it's not in rhythm with the scene before it or the scene after it. Listen, writing is hard. I mean, this is why I admire people who can do it. You know, I'm saying this as though it's, you know, like you got to go back and fix that scene. It's not easy. I'm telling you that there's something wrong with this scene, and I can tell you that what's wrong with it is the rhythm of it. It doesn't coalesce with the rhythm, you know, the, so far, or it's slowed down the pacing, or, you know, it's kind of gone off on a tangent because this is it enough of a focus in the scene or whatever? But going back and fixing it takes skill, you know? And it takes a real sense of one, wanting to do that work, two, letting go of ideas that you think, you know, are fantastic, but maybe needed for another script or later in the script or something like that. You know, that you have to sort of rethink how something is written. And, you know, we do our best to, you know, guide you. Sometimes it's like, check the rhythm of the scene. Sometimes it's an idea might be, and then we give an idea. And it's an idea. And we always say in our notes, you know, you don't have to take any of our ideas. You can take them all, but not in our words, you know, but like the scene might help if it said something along the lines of blah, 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 or it went in this direction. You know, that's right. Just an idea. And it's always just an idea. So that's a big thing. Another thing is, you know, the basics of who is this character? You know, like, why are they doing this? What's their purpose? Why are they acting this way? Why do they want this other person to love them? Or why is it this person they want to love them? Or why, you know, how did these two all of a sudden become, you know, you're the most, you know, you're everything to me. We never saw that happen on the page. Development, you know, of characters and relationships is always a big thing. And a lot of it, you know, also comes down to first act and third act, which are very strongly connected, which is, you know, the backstory of your character and the narrative in the first act. If it's not strong enough, the reveal in the third act, you know, if we're talking about a fairly, you know, fairly normal, you know, three act structure, it doesn't make sense. You know, so there'll be holes in the reveal or holes in the plot, and that's because the first act hasn't been filled in enough to give us the background of why people are acting as they're acting. People can't just act certain ways in script. There are no coincidences when you write. Stop right. Making somebody, you know, who you know, just show up. It doesn't work that way. Characters don't talk out loud to one another, to themselves. Get a lot of that because people don't know how to, you know, they don't know how to create conversations or create information being told that isn't, that sounds too expository. Exposition is obviously something that can be a problem. Some people can write, it can do it well. It's very hard to do, to write exposition, you know, so that it doesn't sound like it's exposition. Mm-hmm. And, you know, natural conversation. It's very hard. I mean, there's, you know, that quote that's like, it took, you know, 8 drafts to have to finally write a normal conversation. Mm-hmm. And that's how reading things out loud and really being honest with yourself can be a great tool in rewriting, because you read it out loud and you think, yeah, it doesn't really sound like how people talk. It's how I want the information to be relayed, because I need to relay this information, but that's not how people speak. And somebody doesn't just all of a sudden start talking to one another, laying out, you know, a plot, talking to themselves rather, laying out a plot. So I always say, you know, unless there's a reason for it, people don't talk to themselves. You know, sometimes voiceover can work. Sometimes, you know, flashbacks can work and so on. But, you know, it's hard. I mean, there's a lot of gimmicks, and gimmicks rarely work. Those are a bunch of what comes in a ton of notes.
Yeah, I think all of those are brilliant. And I feel like I've just been sitting here soaking it up. But what I love about those too is that it's not the typical things that I normally hear. But it is the things that I notice in my own writing, that these are always the issues. And I think the reason you don't hear these so often is that it's harder to solve them, right? It's not like you do A, B, and C, yep. and then you've got your perfect rewrite. It's like, these things are tough to figure out. They're tough to even diagnose. They're tough to even notice. And that's one theme that I love that we've been talking about today is just that it does take a lot of work. It takes a lot of time, and you have to prepare for that, that there are no quick fixes. Yeah. Like, even the model of your screenplay competition is not about quick fixes. It's about putting in the time.
No. That's right. And by the way, I do also want to add that in the notes, it's not just what you're doing wrong. We also tell you what you're doing right.
Absolutely.
So it's not like, oh my God, this was just like pages of, you know, what I did wrong here. No, it's also what you're doing right and saying, more of this, please. This is working.
Yes.
This is how it works. This is a great scene. It did exactly what it was meant to do. It told us this. It developed this character. It revealed something. We can tell that it planted a seed for something later on. Go for, you know, yes, good job. And we will always do that. And you know what? You're absolutely right, Hudson, is that sometimes I have to stop reading a script. I need to, like, go walk the dog because I can't quite figure out how to say what I know is wrong with it.
Right.
With a certain aspect of it. Like, it's sometimes really hard to figure out. You know it's not right. You can sort of figure it out, but how do I convey this to the reader? I mean, to the writer, excuse me, who's reading these notes. And sometimes I need to take a break from it, and then it kind of comes to me, and I can figure out how to say, oh, you know what? This script just is too... One of the things, a script from the other day, was it was just too much on the surface. Like, life is layered. Like, there's complexity. It can't just all be, you know, somebody died, the cops are, you know, someone's murdered, the cops are looking for the killer, the guy who's murdered's brother is also looking for the killer. I mean, like, there's got to be layering
right.
of relationships and plot and things that aren't obvious. And, you know, don't just write it like, here it is, you know, I mean, it's got to have depth, and saying this needs depth is a lot easier than writing depth.
Right.
This is important. This is one of the reasons why our notes can go up to, I don't know, like 10 pages is usually like the, you know, it's usually been like the top of the line yeah. of notes, is that when you read a script, and I can give 10 pages on a 30-page you know, sitcom.
Right.
And I'm always afraid of that. I'm always like, oh, it's 30. Am I going to be able to get to? Yes, I always get to 6 pages. It's remarkable yeah. because there's I mean, some of that is praise and some of that is, you know, this, try this or, you know. The thing is, when I'm reading, I feel like it's not, and I know, I think a lot of competitions who do give notes, and there are some that do give good notes, do this. There shouldn't be like, well, I'm going to give this note, but not that note. And I always think to myself, if I've stopped and I'm like, oh, you know, that doesn't really work, but it's such a small thing. No, it's actually not a small thing. It's everything is a big thing. Like if you're really trying to work, create your best script, and if you want to win or place at a high level where you're going to get our attention and that's going to get other people and we're going to send it to people to get other people's attention. There are no small notes. The more you write, the better you're going to get. I mean, that's just the way it is. You hear it in various, you know, ways all over the internet, all over any book that you read about screenwriting. The more you write, the better you get, you know, and the more you... you know, the more you push yourself, the better you get. It's like playing tennis against someone who's better. You always want to place again, you know, you want to set the bar at a certain place. If you can get on a list and get a laurel, I know people who've collect these things from screenwriting competition, right. which I find just ridiculous. But if you want that, you can probably get it. But if you really want to get to a level where it's getting you somewhere, not just in your writing, but in your career, where you're, you know, we're noticing and we're saying, you know, keep doing this, you know, and show us the next draft. And, you know, maybe we can figure out where to go with it, even if you're not one of our winners. Then, you know, that's what we're looking for. We're just more serious, you know, more serious in that way. And I'm not going to send out a script that I know isn't ready. And, you know, keep sending it in, because like our winner last year, Avi Glick, you know, was a semifinalist for 3 years prior. He also wrote a script that wasn't particularly good, and he knows that I can say that if he's listening to this. And we were like, yeah, this really isn't a good idea. And he was like, yeah, it was just an idea I was trying out.
Yeah.
But he, you know, he entered for 3 years. He got semifinalists. He finally wrote a script that we thought was great. And so did our judges. And he won. And we just, another writer who has been sending us scripts for years and placing and so close so many times to, you know, being one of our three winners and just not making it. And but really a good writer. I finally said, you know, I want to send this to an agent. And I sent it. And now they're, you know, he signed him. And he never won. But he was always very close. And I felt comfortable sending his work to somebody and saying, you know, this is a really good writer. And I don't choose the winners. So sometimes, you know, I'm like, oh, I wish that one had won. But I can still work with that person. And I still do work. I still work with a lot of people and helping them. You know, get their work out to various people, or, you know, trying, or, you know, saying, do a little bit more here and then let me know, and all of this stuff. So I still get to kind of manage behind the scenes, but I'm not the manager, and I'm sort of like the temporary manager.
Let's put it right, like kind of entry level.
So I can find you a manager, and then you know, stay in touch. And I still work with a lot of, you know, I work with most of the people that have been winners, whether they've gotten management or agents through us, which many have. I still work with them because they know the kind of notes that we give.
Love that you provide a lot of value for your winners, but even for those who don't win, who might just be, you know, in the top, that you, if you connect with their material, that they still get a lot of value out of it.
Yeah. I love writers. I love reading. I love feeling that we're helping and that we're doing it not for sometimes for free, but mostly, you know, just at a cost that seems reasonable. I mean, you know, got to put food on the table as well, but you know, we do a lot of giveaways and I just feel like we give a lot of bang for the buck, in a way that, you know, some other competitions, I don't pay a lot of attention to a lot of other competitions, don't have time to, but, I mean, we've got 42 mentors this year. And if you look on our website, you know, finishlinescriptcomp.com, then, you know, you'll see who they are. They're top of the level, you know, producers, writers, filmmakers, executives, you know, showrunners, agents, managers. And, you know, they want to be a part of this. They respect that. They respect what we're doing, which is one of the reasons I'm able to get all these people. It's because they love that it's not just some competition that's taking your money and you never hear from them again. It's a competition that's in kind of along the path helping you improve your script.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for doing this. Let's wrap up with, I'll do kind of four kind of rapid fire questions for you that we ask everybody that comes on. The first one for you, what's your proudest accomplishment?
My son.
Great. What's your, how do you define success?
People respecting the work I do.
Great. What writers do you most look up to and why?
Oh God. I love, you know what? I'm too old to have a memory any longer. who do I love? I love, she wrote, Gone Girl, Gillian Flynn.
Oh yeah. Me too.
I love Gillian Flynn. Yeah, I love dark. I love complex characters. Writers, you know, like filmmakers, I love people like David O. Russell. I love Paul Thomas Anderson. That's my, you know, I love the guy who just, you know what, this is not fast, but I don't know his name off the top of my head, but I just watched The Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Right. I have not.
It's on Netflix.
Yep.
Blew my mind.
Wow.
Yeah, blew my mind. And I love, you know, the guy who did Jojo Rabbit.
Taika Waititi, yeah.
You know, I mean, I think I've just explained exactly. I've just shown you my cards right there with those people.
Yeah.
I love dark. I love eclectic, you know.
Those are great choices. And then finally, what advice would you give to your younger self?
My advice, you're doing okay.
Mm.
Stop worrying so much.
Yeah. I could definitely use that for my current self as well.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, but you know, at the end, just to tack on to that is that, although I have improved over my lifetime when I was, you know, when I came out to Hollywood, and every other assistant was, you know, going out to screenings and parties and stuff like that. And I had terrible social anxiety.
Yeah.
And I still have it to some degree. And I wouldn't go, but I would stay in the office and I would think, well, and I'd see these people get promoted ahead of me because they were schmoozing and doing the thing.
Wow.
And I just thought, do the work, Jenny, just do the work and be the best you can be. I couldn't make myself go out if I couldn't, you know, if I was having a panic attack or whatever. I certainly did go out at times, but it was hard and people were doing it much more than me. And I just thought, your work, you will succeed if you just do the work. And you do it. And listen, I was in the mailroom with people who are running studios right now. So, and I'm running a script competition and I'm so happy running the script competition and maybe I'd be happy running a studio. I'd certainly be richer, but, but it's what I could do and I'm really happy what I'm doing.
That's awesome.
So it's okay.
Very cool. That's a perfect place to end. So tell us, where can people find out more about Finish Line Script Comp?
Our website is finishlinescriptcomp.com or finishlinescriptcompetition.com. Twitter, where it's Finish Line Script without the T. We are on Instagram, the Finish Line Script Comp. And Finish Line Script Competition on Facebook. But we're we're much more, I guess, present on Twitter than any other medium. And I do my best to be there, but I'm usually writing notes. So sorry. I don't know how I guess people hire people to do their social media, but I'm usually reading scripts. So I can't be on Twitter right all the time. But that's where you'll find us.
Well, thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, my pleasure. It's good to talk to somebody.
I know. And like I said before, I'm a giant fan of what you're doing and want to see you do more of it and highly encourage people to check it out. And it's one of the first things I tell people to do when they're asking what they do with their finished script. So.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And obviously people who are, I will promote this as well. And everybody, I do, and you know, I do promote you guys as often as as I can too. I think that you have the best community going. I really admire your commitment to it. So, and by the way, those who don't know, Hudson is a great writer.
Oh, thank you very much. That's very kind. All right.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Jenny. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Thanks, Hudson. Bye, everyone. Bye.
Thanks again to Jenny for taking the time to talk with us. If you're looking to take that next step in your screenwriting journey, I'd love for you to check out Blast Off, our free one-hour workshop to help you launch and accelerate your screenwriting career. You can sign up for free at scriptblast.com. If you're digging the podcast and looking for a place where you can find other supportive screenwriters who actually care about each other in a positive environment, check out our community Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/scriptblast. You can always reach out to me personally at hudson@scriptblast.com. I'd love to hear from you and what you think of the podcast, learn a little bit more about your writing journey. I will see you guys next time.